Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
American singer R. Kelly was yesterday sentenced to 30 years in prison for sexually abusing women, girls and boys more than 20 years after first facing allegations. The 55-year-old R&B artist, known for hit songs like I Believe I Can Fly and Ignition, was convicted last September in New York of racketeering and sex trafficking crimes. With more on this, I'm joined on the line by LA-based entertainment reporter Sean Mandel. Sean, thank you for joining us today on the programme. So 30 years in prison, his defence team has said he's going to appeal that. They were calling for a much lower sentence.
That's correct. And the prosecution, we should note, wanted it to be at least 25 years. And he was facing up to life. So 30 years definitely is something that the prosecution is happy with, as well as victims who spoke outside the courthouse after the sentencing came down also said that they felt that this was one of the victims used the phrase spot on. So this is important to also note that this is not the only trial that R. Kelly is facing. He has another federal trial coming up in August, as well as a state trial. So he's has more charges that he's going to be facing despite this one, even if he does plan to appeal and even if he were successful on that count, which seems incredibly unlikely.
So let's talk a bit about what was said yesterday in court. The U.S. District Judge Ann Donnelly said he had an indifference to human suffering. Can you talk to us a little bit more about what the judge had to say in sentencing?
The judge was really impactful and powerful with what she said. I was quite taken aback. And quite frankly, the evidence that was presented in this trial was and is incredibly disturbing. So the judge had quite a bit of very gruesome material and testimony to wade through. And one of the things that she said is that she will never forget a particular moment or a particular tale that she had heard under testimony about a woman that, or a girl, we should say, that R. Kelly had allegedly kept, in his sort of inner circle of people, of women and girls he had lured there to live with him. And she appeared out from underneath a boxing ring, is what was described, to perform sexual acts on a male who was with him, who then was also a victim of abuse by R. Kelly. So she was really, expressing the horror at what was being leveled against Mr. Kelly and what he was convicted of in September.
And this was a 6-week trial. And at that trial, as you say, the judge heard how he committed a string of different offences, trafficking women from state to state with the help of others.
Exactly. And that was one of the remarks that the judge made as well, is that she felt she was flabbergasted by how so many people could have enabled this type of behavior. And there was testimony during the trial from people who had worked for Mr. Kelly saying, oh, they never saw anything inappropriate, but the prosecution pushed back on that. And of course, I think the evidence and what we've seen from documentary series like Surviving R. Kelly and lots of investigative journalism on the subject is that people in his orbit did know. And so that it leaves open a question as well in terms of, is there going to be any fallout legally or otherwise for the people who were in his orbit and undoubtedly, aided and abetted these crimes?
There were details, too, about his marriage, in inverted commas, because she was underage, to the singer,
yes,
Aaliyah.
That's correct. She was only, it's illegal. It was an illegal marriage, as you say, because she was only 15 years old when they were married. And of course, she died, at a very young age herself. This was 1994, I believe, when they were, in quotes, married. It was a very disturbing relationship, which mirrored most of the relationships that he had with many of these other girls. And what we also learned was that, it seems to be that many of these other girls experienced even more levels of depravity that Mr. Kelly put forth on them. And it really was something that you could tell, even just listening to people in from the reports of people who were in the courthouse, the assembled people listening there were pretty horrified at moments throughout
And
this trial. You could sense it.
you mentioned, Sean, that the victims, some of the victims, made statements afterwards. And it was interesting to hear one of them say that they never felt they would get justice because they were black.
Yes, that is something that is has been a strong point of focus during this trial, because one prominently in 2008, Mr. Kelly faced charges, similar sexual assault charges that were draw that he won basically because he was acquitted of, because the woman in question declined to testify. Now, a lot of people have looked at that and said that the reason why she may not have testified, and the reason why many women have not come forward before, is because they felt as black women and black girls, let's remember again that these were underage girls at the time that they encountered R. Kelly. They felt that they weren't going to be heard, that their stories were going to be discounted, and that, statistically speaking, in the United States, is true, that black women who accuse men of sexual assault and rape, and some of the charges we've seen here, are more often than not denied justice compared to white women in this country. So that is certainly a big moment that I think a lot of the survivors and a lot of women around the country are going to be talking about and rightfully taking note of.
One of his victims, Lizette Martinez, said there were so many things he could have done to stop himself. He had all the resources. We don't have resources like that. He could have gotten help. Is that in reference to what his defense said in mitigation, that he had had a very difficult childhood?
That's correct. That was what the defense had said, that it didn't excuse his behavior, but that it helped explain or provide context for his behavior, which even so is a stretch. But yes, Mr. Kelly in his defense said that he had suffered sexual abuse himself as a child on a daily basis. And there is a cycle in terms of sexual abuse that usually happens based on what we know from psychologists and clinical studies, that often people who perpetrate sexual abuse against children have themselves been sexually abused. And that victim, made a very good point, in that there are so many people who don't have any sort of resources to cope with what is, whatever sort of traumas that they've had come their way, because of financial means and access to those means. Certainly many of these women and girls didn't have access to the help and support that they needed after enduring the treatment that they received from R. Kelly.
He didn't address the court himself, Sean.
He did not. He declined to testify. He didn't even look up from his desk, really, during the sentencing at all, despite the fact that numerous people were trying to, hold his gaze. One of the fathers of one of the victims said that he would give that he forgives R. Kelly, but he said to him that he wants him to look him in the eye and admit what he had done wrong, and that, forgiveness from God, in his words, requires admitting what you have done wrong. So he kept his head lowered today in court.
But his lawyer said he was devastated by the sentence handed down and planned to appeal. You made reference earlier to the documentary series about him called Surviving R. Kelly, which was broadcast in 2019. How influential do you think that was in getting to this point?
I think it was incredibly influential, because really up until then, and I covered that documentary and covered the sort of fallout from that, and the fascination with, for example, one of the girls, Asriel Clary. And there had not been such a intense focus on R. Kelly in the public eye in this way until that moment. There really hadn't been. There had been, all the way back to the 90s, the Chicago Sun-Times had done an investigative report about, alleged at the time sexual impropriety on Mr. Kelly's part, but it never seemed to stick. It never seemed to have put a chink in his armor of his celebrity and his incredible success as a pop R&B artist. And this was the first moment where it was really taken seriously, and there was a real conversation about, wait a minute, what we've all had these, it's been an open secret in the way that in some circles, Bill Cosby's past and his, the horrible things that he did were an open secret. And that moment was the sort of lightning rod, the sort of, center focal point that everything began to crystallize around.
And they share a legal team, don't they, Bill Cosby and R. Kelly, or at least one lawyer in common between them. So you said he's going to face further trials. They're in other states, are they?
One of them is in Illinois, which is where Chicago is. So there is a federal case there, but then there is a state trial in Minnesota that is going to be taking place for allegedly paying a teenager for sexual contact. So he's not out of the woods by mm-hmm. any means in terms of finishing his fights in court.
Sean, thank you very much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And it's worth saying, if you've been affected by anything you heard there, there is help available at the website rte.ie/helplines.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.